Turning Red is the coming-of-age story of Mei Lin Li, or Mei, a 13-year-old high-achieving Chinese-Canadian girl growing up in Toronto in the early 2000s, who struggles with her loving but highly controlling mother. Mei wakes up one day to discover that she now transforms into a magical giant red panda whenever she gets angry or upset. The red panda is an allegory for puberty and for emerging sexual feelings and strivings for independence. Turning Red is the first Pixar film directed by a woman, Chinese-Canadian filmmaker Domi Shi, who co-wrote the screenplay with Julia Cho. Well, Jo, let's start with the Bechdel test in looking at this film, which listeners on the Mole may be familiar with. It was introduced by graphic novelist Alison Bechdel, and it gives three criteria for measuring representations of women in film. First, whether it features at least two women. Second, do they talk to each other? And three, do they talk about something other than men? This perhaps would, on the face of it, certainly meet those criteria. Jo, how would you look at the film from this angle?
Well, these are teenage girls who are obsessed with boys, and in particular, a boy band called 4Town. And a lot of their conversations revolve around that. There's many scenes where they are hanging out and they want to just, now let's look at boys. It's this thing for them to do. But their interest in boys is very much, I think, their own thing. And in a way, it's reflecting their own desire rather than this reflection of male desire to be desired. The men aren't really prominent in the film at all, and in a way are the objects of this female gaze.
And I think the film also is surprising, especially for a Pixar-Disney partnership in this project, in not only featuring a female protagonist, but a world that is very much dominated by girls and women and intergenerational struggles, among mother-daughter struggles that cross three generations, and also takes up strivings for independence and the notion of what it means to be a good daughter in relation to your mother. So the wish to also to achieve in school and do well, to become productive as a young immigrant girl is a very dominant theme here, as well as to break free from the control of your parents. And the relationships with other girls also don't conform to conventional notions of female desirability or femininity. Her friends kind of have a subversive streak. They're rebellious. They're not conventionally, in the Western Eurocentric way, pretty. And so it's not by any means a tale of girls struggling just to attract the male gaze.
Right? They're like your classic unapologetic dork with personalities that are a mix between wearing your heart on your sleeve and Daria-esque deadpan humor. And they have bodies with shapes. I think to Ming, Mei's mother, they appear to be, like you said, subversive, but just also non-conforming and somehow a liability to Mei's success. And at the beginning of the film, Mei is telling us about her family and how the most important thing in her family is the value of honoring your parents, which is this classical Chinese value of filial piety. And she expresses this in terms of honoring herself. She says that people say, well, be careful, because if you honor your parents, you may not honor yourself, which is prefiguring the whole tension of the story in the film, how those two things can be in conflict. But I think that Mei does have that conflict, but it's not simply black and white where her parents are this oppressive other and she's going to be herself. And when she figures that out, she's going to separate from them. Her parents and her family and all of this overbearing relationship actually has a very functional role to play in building her up as a strong character, as a strong person who is her own person. And it's when she's hitting this age of seeing outside the family as where her identity and desires are that she starts to realize that it's more complicated than that.
I would also like to talk about the theme of menstruation that is still a very subversive and taboo topic. And it was kind of funny to see a Disney female character say, has the peony blossomed? Which was an inquiry her mother made about the start of menstruation. You see the mother coming into the bathroom when she thinks May is upset because she started her period, and she brings in all these products and then comes to school, and the over-controlling mother who's there with everything she thinks her daughter is going to need. It was endearingly funny. And it's not seen as a dramatic point. It's kind of a matter-of-fact element of the story, this starting of her period. But as puberty opens up other more threatening desires, impulses, and feelings that destabilize her mother and her plan for her.
And at one point, the mother tries to bring pads to the daughter at school. And this registers that there is still some sort of awkwardness, if not taboo, associated with that because she's embarrassed by this. But what is really going on at this point in the story is that she is turning into a giant red panda and is trying to hide that from her mother, who she doesn't realize knows what it's all about.
Well, let's talk about the red panda image, which of course dominates, and some critics have said it kind of overplays the red panda, and that it represents emotions. It's been described as her messy side, the parts of her that don't fit. I think less of a focus on discussions of the red panda and what it symbolizes in this film is its meaning as a representation of sexual desire, of emerging sexual feelings. What's your take on the red panda as an image that carries this idea of the forbidden, the messy, the out of place parts of girlhood?
Well, the panda is described as being the kind of patron animal of an ancestor of May's who is given this power by the gods to harness her emotions and churn into this mystical giant red panda in an ancient setting to ward off bandits when the men have gone to war. And it's passed down to the women through the generations. And when it emerges in May, it happens in a moment where her sexual desire for a teenage boy is thwarted by her mother. And when she wakes up in the morning and has turned into this panda, and she rushes into the bathroom and the mother thinks that it's menstruation, that sets up this first association with sexuality. But the red panda also is connected to emotions in a more general way. And so getting angry about things, turning red, has this, you know, multivalent possibility where it's about emotions in a lot of registers, sexuality as a positive emotion, anger as a problematic emotion, embarrassment and shame also are things that we speak of turning red about. And all of these things come together in the panda image. The red panda is described as having been chosen and adored by the ancestor because of its mischievous nature and fiery red coat.
And as her father tells her, red is a very lucky color. So he is on the periphery, but also is affirming of her emerging powers and encourages her not to be afraid of the red panda within. I think the issue of sexuality is perhaps important because it's been an area where the film has been criticized, and actually Pixar and Disney films in the past for toning down on any kind of sexuality or sexual identity that deviates from a heterosexist norm. But this is a film about puberty, which often is a phase of development where girls and boys are allowed more pleasure and sensuality in each other. When the red panda emerges, her other girlfriends embrace her, and there's a lot of touching and affection and just sheer joy in each other's company, and the other girls pet her and touch her. So you can see it as even the fur as a signifier of a certain pleasure that girls can take in one another's company and touching that often is forbidden if it's coded more directly as sexual.
One of the things that I really loved about this film is her relationships with her girlfriends become this kind of key to how she understands having a kind of control. And control isn't the right word, because what she's really doing is getting beyond controlling her feelings, but embracing them.
And not being frightened of parts of her that feel too powerful or strong.
Yeah, it's not even like they're causing problems, but it's really the resistance to them that can create the problems. And what happens is she goes to this place in her mind. Her friends have like given her something that she has taken inside as far as a sense of secure attachment with them, and that they always have her back. And that this, rather than some kind of individual willpower or just strategy of subordinating your feelings to something else, is what gives her the ability to turn the panda on and off. By reaching out to others and by having friendships and relationships that support you, you are able to be yourself. You are able to feel better about yourself by having those in your life. And this contrasts with a nihilism that's very typical of youth, that you can't trust anybody. Now, that said, May's attachment to her mother is a very important part of how she grows up, but it is, you know, a dysfunctional attachment. It comes with a lot of baggage for her. It's sown with a lot of Ming's insecurities. And at one point, she tells her mother that she's able to control the panda, because they test her on this, because she just thinks of the people that she loves the most. And her mother automatically assumes, oh, she means me, but really she means her friends. And I think this is a powerful suggestion for kids, that as you're growing up and you are feeling these new big feelings and you're trying to make sense of who you are, that if you don't feel safe with your parents because of how their own insecurities repeat themselves in you, as much as you may love them for all the ways they have taken care of you, that by building these relationships with new people and friends, you will get through that, and you have the possibility of growing up and from that place being able to connect and repair with these first relationships that sometimes give us so much trouble.
So this is Jan Hawken and Joe Clement talking today about the film by Dummy She, Turning Red. I think the portrayal of friendships and even the coming to terms with the boys in a group and this teen girl group of friends is important when you look at the context of how much adolescence is pathologized in the dominant culture. Teens are seen as wild in their emotions, as psychotic if they were a different stage of development. There's a long history of pathologizing adolescence, pre-adolescence, and assuming that kids at that age are just readily go off the rail. And here, it's not at all a mean girl scene. You know, these are girls that support each other. And I think the fact that the film was produced by a group of women who recalled the supportive role that other girls and women had in their lives made it a kind of both a wish and a fulfillment of ways that girls and women can come to terms with each other, support each other, and that surging impulses and strivings for even power are not in and of themselves pathological. It's how much you find ways of connecting with others. The red panda, in a certain way, I think, carries this idea of our desires and impulses as always object seeking, in the sense that they involve desire to connect with others, even sexual feelings, as well as other emotions that humans experience tend to be oriented toward connection with others. And the film deals very effectively, I think, with some of those psychological motifs.
This has been Joe Clement and Jan Hawken, Movie Moles for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking about Turning Red, a new and very worthwhile film to see through Disney Plus, if you have it. Watch for it to come out on DVD. Maybe it'll be at the library once that happens. What you can find at the library right now about Turning Red are some great youth novelizations and other books that will tell the whole story for your kids.
情化心身，鎮壓修心，怨氣歸位，節悟分身，情化心身，鎮壓修心，怨氣歸位，節悟分身。 giving her all my money.